Despite official denials by leaders of the free world, sources now confirm the existence of Megaforce, a phantom army of super elite fighting men whose weapons are the most powerful science can devise. Their mission, to preserve freedom and justice, battling the forces of tyranny and evil in every corner of the globe.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad. Mostly bad. I'm your host, Nick Melton, and with me again, Mr. Damien
Sage. Ace Hunter Sage.
Ace Hunter. There's never been a superhero like him.
I know. He's fabulous.
Indeed he is. Because we are indeed talking about the 1982 film...
Megaforce.
Directed by Hal Needham.
Of Smokey and the Bandit and Cannonball Run fame. He's like the Steven Spielberg of things jumping over things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things jumping over things in this movie. Mm-hmm. All right. According to the box, Megaforce is a futuristic thriller with daredevil stunts and awesome special effects.
Totally awesome.
But what it really is the gayest action movie of all time.
Yes. Just picture an entirely male cast, clad from head to toe in spandex, with feathered, lovely hair, making overt innuendo and glances and nods and brotherly, quote-unquote, love to one another for 100 minutes, with one woman chuffed in there just because I'm sure the studio mandated it upon them.
And who is the death-defying head star?
Our action hero. Our manly man of this film.
And who could they pick from the 80s?
Yes,
they could have picked
There was Schwarzenegger.
Stallone.
There was Stallone. There was even upcoming Chuck Norris. But no, they went for the best with this one. They went for Barry Bostwick.
Yes. He has never been more Bostwickian.
No,
than
in fact,
this film.
He was offered the role of Brad Majors in Shock Treatment, the sequel, but he was busy making this movie.
The
Megaforce.
Sequel to Rocky Horror,
yes,
of course.
Yes, the sequel to Rocky Horror.
Well, we have a lot to discuss about this movie, but while I still have the box in my hand, I feel like we should make fun of it.
Please do.
Because,
it gives an accurate description of the movie.
Accurate enough, yeah. Colossal special effects and death-defying stunts highlight the futuristic thriller Megaforce. Barry Bostwick stars as Ace Hunter, leader of the elite task force of adventurers who gallantly fight to uphold justice. Their ultra-modern weaponry figures predominantly in their perilous mission to save a small democratic nation which has been invaded by a band of ruthless mercenaries. Director Hal Needham's undisputed mastery and knowledge of stunt work is vividly apparent throughout the many action-packed scenes. The high-flying stunts combined with a dynamic display of futuristic vehicles make this an extraordinary film experience.
Yes! Oh, that's exactly what it is not in any way.
Yeah, the box gets every detail wrong.
Yes, let's break down what's going on in the box here. Colossal special effects and death-defying stunts that highlight the futuristic thriller. Okay, well...
Well, for one thing, it's not a thriller.
Yes.
It is, at best, an action movie.
A light action movie with mild comedy that falls flat every time people open their mouths.
Yeah, that is true.
As far as the colossal special effects go, the movie was shot in IntroVision, whatever that means, we don't need to know. And using the Zoptic special effects, which are the lovely effects that cause Superman to be able to fly in the 70s Superman the movie.
Or in this movie.
They cause people to wobbly ride along behind rear screened in footage and or have Barry Bostwick fly on his little motorcycle dirt bike thing.
Which has
end.
Been really poorly painted with
yes.
lightning bolts. With mismatched...
Badass lightning bolts.
Yeah.
Let's go on here, Andy. But we don't need to talk about Bostwick as Ace Hunter because...
Oh, we will.
He's just, you know... He's Bostwick.
He's Barry
as
Bostwick.
Bostwick.
Yeah. And try to imagine Barry Bostwick as a superhero and it just... Yes. It falls flat.
Yes. Completely...
Barry Bostwick just doesn't have the muscle or the swagger to
Brad
pull off
Majors
a superhero.
Mode.
Brad Majors
with
a beard in spandex. I kept expecting him to go, damn it, Janet.
He just needed to lay down on the ground, lift his leg high up above his head.
Because while surprisingly Barry Bostwick can pull off fishnets, he cannot pull off spandex.
The spandex doesn't
work. Or a beard and that stupid headband that he wears the whole movie.
And the blonde bouffant. Of hair. The perm or whatever was going on there.
Okay. Yeah. One thing, though. The plot, according to the back of the box, is about them trying to save a democratic nation from bandits, but...
By save it, they mean ride in and blow it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the movie takes place just in a random desert, and they have... The plot sort of... Isn't even that. I mean...
Yeah, since I've seen the movie enough times while I've just watched it, I'll try and concoct the actual plot here. We open with our bad guy, Guerrera, played by a lovely white scenery chewer, Henry Silva, who is playing a Hispanic person of some type, sitting with his army of dumbfounded men who can't really do anything. And a bunch of tanks and some villagers, peasants, whatever you want to call them. And they blow up a large nuclear power plant, which is apparently the entire village.
The village lives in a power plant.
Yes, and it's a miniature, and obviously one. A very well-made miniature, but one nonetheless.
Well, what did you expect from a movie like Megaforce?
So they blow it up, and then the scene randomly edits to Edward Mulhare of Knight Rider fame. You know him as the guy who gave Michael Knight his missions in Knight Rider. Being brought into the middle of the desert with Persis Combata from Star Trek The Motion Picture. She has hair this go-round, so that makes her sexy. Everyone falls immediately in love with her, and by falls immediately in love with her means
that's what the script told them to do, because in real life
they're all
disgusted macking
by her
on Barry Bostwick.
They're all having sex with each other at the Megaforce compound. So they take Persis Combata and Edward Mulhare out into the middle of the desert, leave them with all of their multitudinous amounts
bags.
Of suitcases.
Yeah.
They're attacked by a snake, which is then killed by our second main leading man, Michael Beck of The Warriors and Xanadu.
He plays basically a country
Dallas.
Bumpkin.
Talks like this all the whole time.
Gosh darn tootin' he does.
Comes and shoots the no-shoulder, a.k.a. a rattlesnake.
Yeah, you're supposed to find his country bumpkin-ness charming, but in reality it's just annoying.
So he, Dallas Beck, takes Combata and Mulhare back to... the middle of nowhere, further into the middle of nowhere, where Megaforce finally makes its first appearance, jumping over things and blowing up random balloons that appear from nowhere.
I thought it was fruit.
Or fruit. Fruit and balloons.
Fruit and balloons.
They're like filled smoke.
What it boils down to is that it's unnecessary
balls.
Shooting.
They're balls.
Yeah, they're shooting balls in the air with missiles
balls,
and machine guns off their motorcycle for no other reason except... To, I guess, impress the people.
Yes, to show off all of their $20 million in 80s money budget that they had.
Man.
Bostwick jumps over a hill and lands in front of Combata, Beck, and Mulhare, struts off his motorcycle, and the dialogue of the film ensues, of which is...
Just for the record, horrible. There were four people who wrote this screenplay.
Yes, and based on an original work by someone else.
Robert S. Kackler. Screenplay by James Whitaker and Albert S. Ruddy,
and
Hal Needham and Andre Morgan.
It's also to be of note, Albert Ruddy and Andre Morgan would go on to win Oscars for producing several Clint Eastwood movies later on in the future.
And I'm sure they're glad that nobody's ever heard of Megaforce.
Believe it or not, a slight story, I emailed Albert Ruddy one time, and the only thing I talked about was Megaforce. He was actually very nice about it, so I don't... I guess he doesn't really feel too horribly about it, or didn't remember it in any way.
Well, I guess they would try to distance themselves from the, at least the memory of Megaforce, if not its wonderful legacy.
Although, I'm sure this is probably Bostwick's favorite movie of his, considering he gets to play a man in this one.
Yes. A man who likes men.
Yes.
Anyway, they go into the base.
Yes, they go into the base. They show off all of their quote-unquote technology, which is a bunch of matte paintings, dirt bikes, and dune buggies with lightning stripes on it that can change color.
Yeah.
That's pretty much...
I thought they were going to have that play into the end of the film, the way it can change color, but it never does.
No.
They're just like, oh, let's show off some of our budget here and have it change color.
Yeah. It's,
What they do at the end is really much more lame.
Yeah. And once they're in the base, they come up with their mission, if you can call it that, Operation Hook, Line, and Sinker.
Worst name for an operation ever.
Yeah. And they're going to basically ride into this little village where the bad guys are and blow up the village.
Yeah.
And then ride away.
Which they will then use as an excuse to have them follow them.
Yes, have them follow them, and then that was going to lead them to where they could capture the bad guys. But oh no, the major plot twist comes in which the mission was so successful, quote unquote, aka they blew up so much stuff that now everyone thinks
with a timer on the screen so that the viewer knew that they could do it all
in
4 minutes.
They are now being said that this has started war talks with Gamibia, which was the nation they invaded.
Okay, let me ask you something. You've seen this movie enough times to maybe answer this. Why is there a random country called Gamibia when the whole rest of the dialogue references like real places like London and China and Gambia and
because. That's the simple reason, because they wanted to have a word to say, like Exorcist 2 has Pazuzu, this movie has Gamibia.
Well, it's lame. It doesn't make sense.
No, but does the movie make sense? No. It's people riding dirt bikes and blowing up stuff for 100 minutes, really. That's essentially
and random skydiving scenes.
And the love scene, which we're not to yet. Oh, no, we have
really?
Already passed
I thought
that.
We passed the love scene.
We passed the love scene, but it's really not...
It's not interesting.
It's not crucial in any way.
The one woman character is like, take me on your mission. And
yes.
Barry Bostwick's like, no,
you're a
chick, woman.
And we can't have so, that. And she goes, well, train me. Put me through all the rigors that all of your men go through, and then you will see that I am capable of going on a mission with you.
And so they skydive.
So, yeah, they skydive.
And there's sappy music.
Sappy music.
And they hold hands.
Then
holding legs. I don't know why they hold legs.
They look like they're going to 69 for a minute, but then Bostwick gets really not too happy with that, and he goes, floof! And the
parachute
opens, and he gets away from her as quickly as he can. By the way, the parachute is a rainbow flag.
Yeah.
And,
gay!
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, then later on, you know, he tells her she can't go on the mission.
Yeah, after all that, like, 20 minutes of training montage, like, no, you're still not coming.
They kiss thumbs, they wave goodbye.
Yeah, that wave, imagine...
Hold your thumb up, kiss it, and then wave it.
And then wave your fist.
Yeah. Anyways, then they have the mission I was going through where they blow up stuff, and then they get double-crossed because the mission of blowing up things has caused them to seemingly declare war with whatever country controls Megaforce and Gamibia.
I am imagining that it's the United States who control Megaforce.
I think it's implied that Megaforce is more like it's the one peaceful thing.
It's
like
every the UN.
Big pie of
it's like the UN
yeah.
of elite military task forces.
That can't really do anything. Yeah,
no.
That's
well, with Ace Hunter in charge, you know, they just need a better commander.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all pretty incompetent, but...
Yeah. But, so they get double-crossed, and now they can't get back over the border, so... They have to sneak up behind the bad guys and punch through there and get on through past the bad guys and get picked up in a plane and... ride back to safety, which of course they do because they're the good guys.
And the good guys always win. Even in the 80s, yeah.
But
Ace!
Yeah!
Oh yeah, we should mention that the main villain,
he's
Guerrera,
pseudo-Hispanic and completely crazy.
Henry Silva is a former roommate
of
Ace Hunter. And they served in the war together, and for some reason they...
had many drunken nights together.
In Nice, France.
Yes,
France. And
they
as a souvenir, they carry around
each other's
cigarette lighters.
And,
yeah.
And Guerrera also openly kisses Ace
and tells him that he loves him.
So if that's not evidence that this is just... The movie, the poster itself should just be a rainbow flag with Barry Bostwick's face on it.
I kind of like the pose he's striking on the poster. Just standing in front of it with that stupid
gun
that he never uses.
It's for the chick. It's for her.
It's for her.
Yes.
Yes.
Get rid of all the ladies, then Megaforce can rule the world.
Exactly.
We'll have Egg create... Egg, the scientist who creates all of Megaforce's
gadgets. Who is a really strange actor. Do you remember who that actor was?
No.
I don't remember offhand.
No.
But anyway, he sort of stutters all his lines.
I would assume he's George Firth. That would be my assumption.
Well...
But Egg would get rid of all of the women and make clones of all the men, and then Megaforce can just take over Earth. I think that's their...
Yeah, Megaforce. Yeah, they're sort of a useless military force. I don't know why the world. I don't know what to say, because the movie isn't set in a post-apocalyptic future. It's the 80s when it takes place.
They say it's futuristic, but they plainly say that it's the 80s in the film. So
yeah, twice, because at the very end of the credits, they repeat the same clip verbatim of him saying, the good guys always win.
Maybe it's not 1982. It's the epic, harrowing future of 1989. I think that's
a lame excuse. Really lame.
I can't help what the box says. They don't actually say it's the future in the film, so...
No, they say it's the 80s.
Yes.
Where were we in plot?
We were sort of at the end. The boys of Megaforce ride on their dirt bikes and dune buggies
and blow
shoot
up
rockets
tanks.
And lasers and shoot immoving tanks that do nothing and can't aim. And they ride past them to a plane that's waiting for them on the other side of a dry lake bed. And
but wait, they have to escape, so what do they do?
They emit rainbow-colored smoke from the back of their bikes and create a lovely panoramic flag of queerity as they ride across the desert to the plane to
escape. Let me mention that the smoke is coming out of their dashboard, so I don't know how
they can't see, really, but you know.
But they stay in perfect formation, so you can see the rainbow flag sweep across the desert.
Yes, it's a lovely, lovely... sentiment of equality.
Of equality.
Yeah.
So they all get in the plane, and the plane's about to take off. But wait, where's Ace?
Ace has gotten sidetracked because he's fallen off his bike for some reason, and he has to go back and say goodbye to Guerrero.
So he hops on the back of his tank, knocks on the top of the gun, and the guy
comes
out.
Makes a lovely leering face at him.
And that's when Guerrero goes, Ace! Like his face just brightens.
Yes, it makes his day, and Bostwick says, I just wanted to tell you, good guys always win, even in the 80s. And then
he shoves a cigar in his mouth. Lights it with his lighter and makes this weird laugh and just goes away.
Hops on his bike.
For unnecessary, quote-unquote, tension to see whether he'll get in the plane in time, which in the end doesn't matter because as he discovers his bike can fly.
The plane is taken off and everyone in the plane is upset because Hunter hasn't made it back.
And there's
but he comes out of the smoke in the desert and turns on his little
jet bike wings
and... Zoptics into the sky. Horribly Zoptics. Imagine, if you will, taking a toy motorbike and putting a doll on it and putting it in front of your TV and filming that. That's what the special effect looks like.
At least they get Bostwick to move around a little bit, so you can tell he's a real human
being. He's actually controlling the bike some and orgasmically thrusting.
Oh, yeah, we noticed that.
Humping
too.
The bike and...
Oh, he's not humping the bike, but it's close to it.
Yeah.
And anyway, he gets into the plane and...
Pulls into the back, everyone hugs him, all the men are back together again. Then they fly across the border to where Edward Mulhare is telling everyone that he had no involvement with the horrible, horrible happenings in Gamibia. When lo and behold, Ace and Megaforce show up in the plane, and everyone goes, woo, yay! And then Ace blows up Edward Mulhare's helicopter.
The only vehicle in the whole movie that is not beige.
Yes, it's red and has shag carpeting, apparently, that we never get to see.
He spends a lot of time in that helicopter.
Yes. He I don't know what he has going on there, but needless to say, he can't do it anymore.
Right. And then Ace does the stupid thumb wave again, and then
it freeze frames. And zooms into the title credit sequence, which is sort of a montage of clips / some outtakes, alternate shots set to the wonderful theme song by Ace Frehley of Kiss's band at that time, 707, and where it's they're coming on like a Megaforce. Da, 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 da.
I wish we had a rock band so we could record you doing that.
Yes, I know. And we should also give a special kudos to Gerald Immel for the lovely, weird score.
The score that bops back and forth between orchestral, military-ness.
Jazz, orchestral, military.
And then just pure
funk,
80s.
Disco,
yeah.
Synthesizer wonderfulness.
And it creates some wonderful, delightfully jarring moods.
Yes,
yeah.
It's like, happy! I don't know what's going
disco.
On.
Disco!
Yeah! Woo! Love! Everyone's sad. Disco!
Yeah, basically this is the weirdest movie ever.
It's the... If you thought other 80s action movies were gay, you need to see Megaforce, because it tops them all, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I gotta give them props for being so subtly gay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, we've made it sound like everybody is just mincing down the aisles, yeah, like, going, woo, you know, Madonna's here, you know,
You sort of have to read into it a little bit, but there are...
But not by much.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is compromised of a lot of knowing glances and inside jokes between the men and just phrases and things that only people who have had sex just off camera would say to each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what else is there to talk about in Megaforce?
Megaforce also has Rubik's Cube in it, which any 80s movie really needs. And we'll go through some of the horrible dialogue here.
Oh, yeah. I feel like the script, only a script written by four people could be that muddled.
Bostwick gets the lovely line of, if you wanted the comfortable tour, I could have gotten in touch with my contacts at Disneyland. And speaking to the general... Is that the general consensus?
Funny! And then there are like lines quoted from Gilbert and Sullivan. He's the very model of a modern major general.
You get lots of hoity-toity guys. A guy listens to classical music and he's the black guy of the movie. So strangely for an 80s movie, they made him the most intelligent one. And the Asian person in the movie is completely dumb. So,
well, they're all
dumb. Completely dumb, but you know.
Well, some are less completely dumb than others.
Then we also have my personal favorite line in the film, when annoying Dallas is talking to Egg when they first go into the base, and Dallas says something I don't remember along the line, the thermometer line, and Egg goes, "Dallas, what do you have when you don't have less on? Moron?" Exactly. Doesn't make any sense, but he's calling him stupid, so I guess that counts for something.
Yeah, at least they recognize it. I feel like there was another line along those lines.
The moment before they drop in for the big mission, and Bostwick's looking contemplatively off to the side of the camera, and Beck says, "I know what you're thinking about, you might as well bother along with her. This old buddy of mine, before we dropped out in Nam, he said something to me. He said, 'You love him in red, you love him in blue, but mostly, you love him in blue.'" Then there's a long pause where Bostwick doesn't understand what's going on in any way. And he says, "It's totally inexplicable to what's going on right now, and it's dumb. But who said that? You did. But it's wise. Very wise." And,
That movie is horrible.
The dialogue pretty much sums up the whole movie. It is pointless.
You'd think at least some of these screenwriters could be functioning as like grammar checkers and...
Well, I think really the big thing of it was Hal Needham was trying to bring his Burt Reynolds down home good boy countryness to a gigantic big budgeted action movie with lots of explosions that just didn't work. When Burt Reynolds is riding around in a Trans Am with Sally Field and Dom DeLuise in the back seat, laughing and giggling through the bayou, trying to transport beer across county lines, it's fine. But when you have people on flying motorcycles blowing up a small country, it's either just completely weird or it makes them all seem like they have a social disorder.
Right. I'm going to venture that Namibia is the 80s equivalent of Mexico.
Maybe. I always thought it was like a Middle Eastern country. I could never tell.
It could be set in any desert.
It's very hard to tell where Namibia is.
Doesn't really sound like any place on Earth.
It doesn't sound Hispanic. It doesn't sound...
African.
Yeah. It's on an island in the middle of nowhere that they don't show desert the ocean island. Around. Yeah. A desert, endless island. And that's pretty much all Megaforce is. I know Nick here puts the posters to the movies in his little page with the
up on the website
here.
Yeah.
So if you look at that poster and that appeals to you, that's pretty much the movie right there.
Deeds, not words.
Yeah, they act, they don't speak, and when
they were
speak,
actually
going to
make
English,
a they were planning on making a sequel called Deeds, Not Words.
Yes, they wrote the sequel, but due to the epic failure. Well, actually, I can give you the interesting story behind that. This movie was released the weekend of another little 80s movie called E.T. And then the next week, or like the week before or whatever, the next week after, came Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and then it was not released at a good time to be in the sci-fi action genre.
So many better movies released at once.
I imagine if they'd released this in like a September or something when it wasn't against anything, it probably could have made back its money at least. It would by no means have been a big hit, but for its $20 million budget, I think it made like $3 million at the box office.
Ooh. And if they ever release it on DVD, they might start making them back some of that in video
sales. Yeah, we need some Bostwick Needham commentary.
And this is a movie that I would really like to see, you know, with the picture remastered and all that.
I imagine in Blu-ray it would look... I mean, it looks bad on VHS, of course, but that's because, you know, it's an old copy, but... On Blu-ray, you'll just be able to see every tiny little flaw. That there
every
are
little
many,
detail
many,
in every matte painting.
Yes.
All the little plumes of rainbow smoke.
And all the penis lines in the spandex costumes will just pop right out at you in 3D.
That's a lot. That's something we have to look forward to.
Yes. And hopefully they'll include the... I've never seen it, of course, but there was a making-of special where Bostwick hosted it in his... Ace Hunter costume, and he talked about in his Bostwickian way, I'll sort of just paraphrase, yes, the military visited us while we were making this movie. They looked at our equipment. They were very impressed. And some of it has even had to be classified. We had to cut that stuff out.
Yeah, right.
Of ironic note, though, during the Bush administration, there was a military team created called the Megaforce. We don't know if it's inspired by this movie, but I could imagine.
But I would like to hope so.
So I can imagine this being one of W's favorite films.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it appeals to his intellectual level.
Before
we get too political. Yeah. Anyway, final thoughts on Megaforce?
Final thoughts on Megaforce is it's awesome. There are explosions every 3 seconds. And lots of good-looking 80s porn starry men in spandex uniform aiding and blowing up things. So,
and Barry Bostwick.
And Bostwick. Lots of it. You get close enough to the screen, you will taste it coming off the screen. And it's buttery goodness.
Yeah, as for me, wow, what a stupid movie.
Yes.
But I could not have enjoyed it more. It was incomprehensible, the dialogue was terrible, the special effects were actually not that bad, but again, they had a $20 million budget.
Yes.
If you can find this, definitely watch it, or watch it several times.
Yes. Own it and love it. It's a special thing.
Yes. Anyway, this has been Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad, mostly bad. I am Nick Melton.
And I am Damien Ace Hunter Sage.
Catch you folks on the flip side.
I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.